Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us on Lit Radio podcast. I'm Teja, and today I'm joined by Ivan Jung. We'll talk about his book, Pandora's Pivot, a primer for leading in an AI-driven world. Ivan is an author, engineer, organizational psychologist, coach, and researcher who possesses a rare blend of technical expertise and business acumen. In Pandora's Pivot, Ivan reveals how business leaders can use AI to enhance decision-making, creativity, and communication. He emphasizes that becoming fluent in the language of AI is essential for leaders today. Hi, Ivan. It's a great pleasure to have you back on Lit Radio podcast so soon after the publication of your first book, The Pharaoh's Speech. So first of all, how are you today?
Well, I've been really busy with the Pandora's Pivot preparation for it. I've been getting quite a lot of early supporters, actually. Several individuals have asked me for books. They have started reading it. And the feedback so far is great. And I'm looking for it to be launched in Hong Kong, actually, on the 26th of November this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, so as you mentioned, we are now here to talk about your second book, Pandora's Pivots, which is all about AI. But before we do that, could you tell us a little bit more about your background in AI and how you get into this subject?
So I've been fascinated with AI for a long time before it was generative AI, and even how AI was used to help with processes and all those. I've been quite fascinated with that for a while. But I really got interested when generative AI came about because I'm looking at how AI is being deployed in the application part. Like, how do you use AI in industry? How do you use AI in philosophy? How do you use AI, in my case, applied psychology like coaching and mentoring? So, in fact, recently I've been commissioned by the European Mentoring and Coaching Council to do a research on AI and its implication on coaches. So the title of my research was AI, is it the friend or foe? And we look at how AI is being used among coaches, how generative AI is being deployed in the processes of coaching, and where they find useful or not. And then we survey our international members. So we survey a global members of almost 80 people, 80 coaches of various degree of expertise and wisdom. And then we look at how this AI has been impacting on them. So I'm actually very interested in this sort of intersection of AI and its application. And at the moment, I'm also the PhD candidate in applied psychology for the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, where my focus is again in AI and coaching. So I'm trying to see how we can actually deploy AI and use AI in a more efficient way, harness its true transformative power, but at the same time, use it ethically. So we don't have a framework for that at the moment. We don't have a framework say, look, how you can use that in coaching, how can you use that in, say, philosophy or psychology. That's still, you know, a big piece of missing. Some work has already begun in education, how to use AI for education. That area, we've seen some work done, some research done, but I think the other areas is still open for, you know, for discussion, I would say, and for us to actually then input ideas on how we can manage and to use AI ethically.
Absolutely. And then why did you decide to write the book, Pandora's Pivot?
Well, Pandora's Pivot, I write it because I feel that we are at the crux of something very transformative. So I don't know about you, but I feel that it's back to the time of the pre-internet days in the early 2000, during my time. So in those days, we dial up to the internet. It's super slow. You use the telephone line to dial up. Nobody would ever consider the idea of making online payment because it's not trustworthy. So nobody wants to put their credit card onto the internet. And nobody would have thought that you can actually have multiple social media sites. Those that were non-existent at all, you know, sharing information. I mean, the idea of phantom of you putting your resume on LinkedIn, that's not happening as well, you know. And in those days, if you have the ability to create a website, you have the skill to do that, you'll be commanding a high salary. Just imagine that if you know how to hook up an internet, give it a URL, and then, you know, you use all the HTML languages, you are able to then, you know, command a lot of money in those days. I feel that AI is back in those days, exactly at the beginning nascent of the boom of internet. And although everybody understands that we are at the crux of something big, but adoption is very sluggish. Business people do not really understand AI beyond the simple of using it as prompting it to create certain output. But in order to deploy in business or even in organizational development or personal development, beyond just using it as a user, you have to understand the fundamentals, the technical points that created this AI. And the interesting thing is, why I really got interested is because in the year 2000, I felt that I should have learned computing coding. I should have learned how to code. So I'm not a computer scientist, but I did eventually learn how to code. But I'm not as great as the other coder. And to access information to learn how to code is difficult. But today, AI is able to code for you. You don't even need to learn Python. AI will code for you. You can just prompt AI to do it. So by that token, everyone should be able to access this easily. But it is not the case because to look into technical terms of anything, it can be dry for non-technical people. So Pandora's paper is written in such a way that I'm telling again a technical explanation from a story from the Greek mythology. So you get the story. That story allude to certain technical terms that's happening that I'm trying to explain. And then the second part of the chapters, we go deep dive into that technical area that I'm trying to get you to understand. And the third part of the conversation, we talk about what possible things that you can do with this newfound capability. So I that's the reason why I write it actually, is to enable non-technical people, business people who will be able to use this to transform the organization to be able to have attain AI fluency so they can talk to their technical AI engineers how to actually put AI into practical use.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's all very interesting, and I would like to explore it a bit further. But before that, what's really unique about your book is that it uses Greek methodology, ancient Greek methodology, to explain the semantics of AI. So, why do you think that ancient Greeks have a lot to teach us about AI?
Apart from everybody knows that Pandora pivot, Pandora opening the Pandora's box as the beginning of the story, so everybody will know, okay, we are talking about AI, it's opening something dangerous. So apart from that, I think the Greek have spent many of their time and experience in understanding what is it to be human. For example, the philosophers like Aristotle, he came out with quotes like, the beginning of wisdom is know yourself, things like that. Because the Greek, Aristotle, Plato, they have spent years and years to understand human. What is it to be human? And if you look at the Greek mythology, which is the Greek gods, right? The Zeus, the Hephaestus, the Prometheus, all the things that are happening within the gods is actually about being human. Now, what will inform AI and is actually to understand what it is that makes us human. What it is that makes us human will then drive AI. So our hubris, our ambition, our ego, our morality, those are the ones that drive the AI. An example would be, I think ChatGPT sent Altman just make an announcement that they will enable people to generate adult materials on ChatGPT on OpenAI. And then he made a comment that OpenAI is not a moral police. So you see, again, it goes back to we as humans, our desires, our ambition, our egos that drive the AI. So what better people that can tell us how to, learn how what makes a human than the Greeks, because they have spending, years and years to understand that. And they've written it down for us. They've given us a record of what it is like. So that's why I chose ancient Greek to actually talk about AI.
Yeah, very interesting. And then it follows quite nicely from the Pharaoh speech where he used Egyptian wisdom. So yeah, I think it really follows that line nicely. And then as you mentioned, you compare AI with the Pandora's box. So does that mean AI will only bring havoc? And what are the biggest issues that we'll be facing with AI?
I think the idea of that, whether if AI is going to bring only havoc, we can relate back to the story of Pandora. So we all know Pandora opened the box. She released the eels to human into the world, but she then quickly realized with her wisdom that something is wrong, and she closes the box. And the only thing that she left trapped in the box is LPs, which is hope for the world. So now, drawing parallel to that, there's still hope because in the box we have trapped hope. We can still release hope. But how do you want to release it? But if you go back a little bit, Pandora was an innocent, person, because she was being entrapped by Zeus to open the box. First of all, Zeus gave her the box. Then Zeus made her curious by telling her, do not open the box. And Zeus wanted her to open the box. And the reason why Zeus did all this was because Zeus was mad with Prometheus, which is the god of afterthought. Now, Prometheus has a brother called Epimetheus, which is the god of forethought. So Epimetheus and Prometheus were the titans that supported Zeus. So they're supposed to be buddy, Prometheus and Zeus. And then Prometheus was then given a task to make men by Zeus. But Zeus told Prometheus, do not love men more than you love me. And do not ever give men fire. But because Prometheus loved his creation more than he loved Zeus, he decided to steal fire from men. And then that, caused Zeus to be very angry. And then Zeus was finding a way to get back at Prometheus. And he thought, wow, I'll make a woman. I will then bless this woman with many gifts. So the name Pandora also means blessed with many gifts. So he blessed Pandora with many gifts. He get all the different gods to give gifts to Pandora, including his own daughter Athena, who then gave the wisdom to Pandora. Then he did all this so that he could entice Epimetheus or Prometheus to marry Pandora. So eventually Epimetheus, the brother of Prometheus, the god of afterthought, married Pandora and made him his wife. And then he sent Pandora to the home together with a box and tell her not to open it. So if you look at it, the havoc came because Zeus wanted to take revenge. So if you draw parallel to all these things, those people who now, or the organization or the companies that control the large language model, their intentions, what they want to do with the models, and how they want to get other people to use the model, those are critical. So to get back to your story, it's like, so if we are all users like Pandora, so we need to know, understand what we have in power. What are these organizations giving us? What are these companies, AI companies, what kind of models they're giving us? So if we can understand that, then we'll know when to open and not to open, or when to release hope and what we should do. We can understand that. And an example would be, if you look at a model now, if you understand AI technically, you would then know how to test for hallucination, et cetera, things like that. So you have to get first understand what builds it, and then try to understand the intention of those people who created this large language model in the first place, before you then use it for your own purposes. So I don't think it's all havoc. In fact, I think AI has given us a lot of cognitive ability that non-human can ever imagine, and gaining that kind of cognitive powers. I mean, imagine today the way AI can scour the data, look into analysis, and create for you an information that you were never, in our capacity as human, unable to process so much data. That cognitive power alone is already a very good, positive thing about AI. You use it to create drugs for the better of humanity. You use it to actually look at more the data and information to make better informed decisions about what you want to do, especially big projects. And those are all the positive points. But of course, the flip side of it is this: why are you using it for? Why was it built? Which then answers your second question, which is the biggest challenge we're facing now is the ethical use of AI. How are we going to use it ethically? I think that's the key.
Absolutely. But I think what you're saying, another thing that you say in the book, and I find very interesting, is that to harness the power of AI, we need to focus not on its intelligence, but its artificiality. So, what do you mean by that?
So what I mean by that is, like, AI is built like a tool, and the brains that built it is actually human, but it is still an artificial thing as compared to a human. So AI has been around for many years, right? We all know that. But what makes it generative was 10 people who was working for Google came up with this concept of transformer. So basically, you have a you create you use a token to represent every single word. And then, because of the huge number of data that we have today, it then makes guesses like what word should come after this word, like the word before it, to make the context meaningful. So it is actually making guessing, actually. It's an artificial intelligence, because human won't talk like that. We'll just tell you what's in our mind. We're not going to look back at our data, a number of words, and see which one will match the next word. We won't do that. So it's artificial. Now, if you understand the building blocks of AI, then you can harness its full power, right? But if you think about only its intelligence, then you're only looking at its cognitive ability, which is basically things like processing the data, give you an output that you ask for, then you're limiting yourself on what AI can do for you. That's what I mean, actually. So I'm trying to encourage non-technical people to go and understand this complexity, the technical building blocks of AI. I'm trying to make it more accessible by telling stories around it and relate those stories to the technical terms. So I have a lot of difficulty writing this book because I needed to tell a story that allude to a technical term in the second part of the chapter. When you finally read the technical part, you then have a story to relate to. So it's less boring and easier to understand. And then from then lead to the third part, which is how you can use this newfound power in what area that I can talk about. And so to do this book, I think it took me, it's a thinner book compared to the Ferris page, but it's much more harder to write because of the things I'm trying to work out. And I also put myself a second condition, which is all the gods that I use in the story must have something to do with Pandora. So in the book, I mentioned about Zeus, Prometheus, Epimetheus, Pandora. I talk about Hephaestus, the god of Iron Forge, who make Pandora. I talk about Athena, the goddess who gave the wisdom to Pandora. I talk about Hera, the wife of Zeus, and why Hera was involved because Hephaestus was involved, and the Hephaestus married the hand of marriage of Aphrodite, which is Venus. And so all these gods have something to do and related to Pandora, and I make that story full. And I think that was the challenge, actually, the creativity part of it. And of course, to explain the technical part of it in a more creative way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you made that in a very fascinating way because, as you explained, using that Greek methodology throughout the whole book and connecting all of those technical terms in a way that's understandable to people, I think it's quite unique. And yeah, I think you've done a great job in that. And then to go back to what you've talked about a little bit earlier about business people and the need for them to be fluent in the language of AI. So, why do you think that's a must for any business leader in today's world?
Well, I think one of the reasons is because business people will understand business processes. So at this point of time, if you do anything that's IT or create any application or anything, you just tell, oh, I just draw, I will just let my IT people know how to do it, what I want, and then let them go and do the programming. But see, that's the thing, because in AI, the capability is more than just telling your programmer what to do, because it can give you more options. If you know how to prompt it for questions, it can give you more options that your engineers can give you. Because, I mean, you can actually get more information from AI, but you need to understand what to ask for, right? And then, if the business people can attain what we call AI fluency, meaning they can speak this language of AI, then they are able then to talk to their technical colleagues, right? Number one. Number two, they can solve bigger problems in business together because it's no longer a siloed process where, oh, I tell you what I want and then you can program it. Then without you understanding where the challenges of the program, where the opportunity can arise, you don't do that. And then the other thing is that you can then enhance your productivity, actually, because you can articulate faster what you want, right? And you can tell it in a technical term ideas to your technical people. And I think that's where the intersection comes in. You can then really, really, really see, if I want to do this process, what can I get AI to do for me? Simple thing. Like, even agentic AI, there's so many different types of agents, how you want to do the agents, which part of the agents you want to replace your process. So you have to understand that. Then you can then say, okay, look, tell your AI engineers that I want this set of agent to be functioning at this part of my process. I want this is our agentic system to function at that part of my process. You can only do that if you understand, the AI terminology or the processes or the technicality of AI.
Yeah, absolutely. And how does the dynamic between business people and tech people change in the workplace once they all understand the language of AI?
I think if you look at once there's this when people are able to communicate in the same language, it's almost like everybody goes to business. English is the business language, like we are talking today, because we understand each other. Imagine if you're not speaking English together, then there is a more layering of doing communication. For example, I need to then talk to a translator, translate back to you, and then that those things happens, and then we lose something in translation. So I think by doing this, by understanding this, you can then have clearer communication, number one. Number two, also finding ways to actually then now audit your own AI to see if the output is what you want and what kind of changes you can make into the output, into those input, so that it becomes, you get the output that you want. The third thing is, how do you train your models? Because the business people will have a purpose of the model, and then the AI, the engineers will need to train the model to meet that purpose. Then how does training is being done? What kind of training data will you fit into it? So those questions get answered faster and you get more accurate data to go in. I think that's the key thing about once, if you're able to do this communication very well, I think you can then do a lot of transformative things with it.
Yeah, absolutely. It just takes makes all of the work more efficient between both departments. Great. And then, so at the beginning of our conversation, Ivan, you mentioned you really got into AI with the introduction of agentic AI. And in the book, you talk a lot about AI agents. So for those of our listeners who don't really know what those things are, could you explain it and also share why that's so interesting to you, and why it might be very important in the business world.
In fact, agentic AI, while I was writing this book beginning of in January, agentic AI was already heavy in a discussion in the, in the books, in the other books in the market, where the more technical books about AI and agentic AI is already a big conversation. In fact, now, if you go to the into the market, already companies are creating a lot of agents. In fact, school children can create agents now with the available tools. So why agent is important is because, now go back to the story of Pandora. Pandora had the agency to decide for herself whether to open the box or not. Nobody tell her to don't open it or open it. Yes, Zeus told her don't open it with the intention for her to open it. But whether to open it or not on that day, on that moment, is Pandora's own decision. So in that case, an agent is like Pandora. It has agency to make decision for us without the human being involved. So imagine, actually, this is also the concern that Yuval Harari has in his book, The Nexus. Because for the first time in the history of mankind, we do not need a human in the loop of information decision. In the loop of information, if for the first time ever, you don't need a human to be involved because the agent can make the decision for you. An example would be, I'll tell my agent, I want to book a flight to London at a certain time, at a certain date. What type of air carrier that I want and what budget. And then the agent will go and do it and decide for me what to do and give me an outcome. So we don't know what this agent is going to do, how they're going to do it, what we get the outcome they want. So imagine if you tell the agent, get me a cup of water or a bottle of water, the agent might go and steal it for you, but he will still bring it to you. Because whether to decide to steal or not is not your no longer your decision. It's the agent's decision, right? So now, I think in my book, I wrote about how NVIDIA actually define agent. And I think it's a good chance to talk a little bit of a technical thing. So NVIDIA explained that an agentic AI or an AI agent uses a four-step process for problem solving. So the agent is actually solving problem for us, but using a step process. One, it perceive. The agent, AI agent, will then perceive, gather, and process data from various sources, such as database, sensors, or around it. After it perceive, it then reason with itself. The AI agent will understand the task that was given, generate the solutions, and coordinate, ways to execute the solutions. And then the third thing is the AI will then act on and execute a task based on the plan it formulated that it think is the best to meet the task. The most efficient way to meet the task. That's one. He will act on that one. And the best part is the agent will then learn through continuous improving, iterative by doing the task and gets better at it. So this is AI agent. So now we are not even talking about a single agent. We're talking now about different type of agents. There's goal-based agent. You give it a goal, you try to do it. The utility-based agent who can then make solutions based on weighing the type of solutions that can be done to achieve the task. And then you can gather all these agents into an AI agent system or a multiple agent system. So you just imagine, right? All your processes is now being done and decided upon by an agent who has free will to make decision for you. That's why it's important to understand agent, because if you build an agent, you probably want to make sure that it does things ethically, it does things the most efficiently, yes, but you also learn to the right things, where to get the information, etc. So that's why understanding AI from a technical point of view is important. You can then ask the AI engineers, look, I'm going to get this AI to do this. How do we ensure that it actually meets all the ethical things that we want to do? Have you built in certain safeguards? Or is there any database that we can use to make sure that the agent can access information from the right database? So that is why I think it's important to know the artificiality of AI. And then the most important thing is definitely the agents, because it's going to be the way how AI is going to be deployed to the world from now onwards, I would say.
Fascinating. And of course, our listeners can read more about that in the book. But now
Yes.
I've got one final question as a conclusion to this conversation. So, what's the most important message that business people should take from this conversation today and from the book as a whole that you think they should definitely remember?
I think at the end of the day now, it's really about harnessing AI's true power through its artificiality and not its intelligence. That's the key theme about the whole book. But the second thing I want to talk about is, like, now the discussion is still about the technology, about AI, or maybe regulatory, the copyright laws about AI. But I think moving forward, we should start exploring the governance of AI around its deployment in our lives. For example, in psychology, in in psychotherapy, or in education, of course, and in the workplace. How do we govern that? I think with social media, we miss an opportunity. So for better or worse, we are where we are today. But if we had an opportunity to say, look, social media powers is here, this is how we want it to be, how we want to govern it. It'll be great if we had that framework then. But AI is much more powerful than social media. So we need to have that framework and that governance that we're looking at. I think for more and more now, I think the discussion will need to involve non-technical people who are in the work, who are using it in the world, in the workplace, in education, in psychology, to come in and start informing the rest of the people how we should deploy this. An example again, I think, if I draw back to the example of how ChatGPT will allow adult content, I mean, you can imagine how dangerous that can be, right? Because you can then create your own things, and you can create your own imagination. And how are we going to regulate that? That's a big question. And I think these two things: one is how you harness its power through its artificiality. The other one is how to ethically use AI. And we can all now play a part by forming this thing as a user of the world, to say, look, this is how we want it to be used. And then if you can set this right, then maybe the young kids that comes up will then be able to understand that. And they will eventually, we are now the pioneer. We can set the pace. We can set how it can look like. We can shape this thing into something more beautiful than something dangerous.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that,
Yeah.
Ivan. I would encourage our
Yeah.
listeners to grab a copy of the book, Pandora's Pivot, so they can read a lot more about everything we've discussed today. But thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Thea.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.